What's good, everybody? This episode of the podcast is sponsored by DistroKid. They are the go-to for digital music distribution and the easiest way for musicians to get your music onto Spotify, iTunes, Amazon, TikTok, YouTube, and more. They offer unlimited uploads, and artists keep 100% of their earnings in stores 10 to 20 times faster than any other distributor. Fastest payouts. They help out with automatic splits, cover song clearance, and all kinds of other amazing tools and templates to help you get the most visibility for your releases. I dig this company and appreciate their business model that offers more features than any other distributor at the most affordable price possible for solo musicians, bands, DJs, studio artists, and any other creators that are producing music in their home, and they also offer label services as well. They've got three different tiers to offer creators that start as low as $22.99 a year. That's just $1.92 a month, and even their top tier is just $7.50 per month. And the best part about DistroKid sponsoring the podcast is that they are offering Dan Cable Presents listeners and viewers 30% off your first year membership with DistroKid, making their already affordable prices even cheaper for you. Check out the link in the episode notes. I will also put it in my Instagram bio in the link tree. That link will give you 30% off that first year of service. Super stoked to have DistroKid sponsoring the podcast and cannot thank them enough for their longtime support of this thing. This episode of the podcast is also sponsored by Puff Coffee. Puff is one of my favorite coffee shops in Portland, Oregon. They've got a location off 28th and Stark in Southeast. Their coffee is delicious, and everyone that works there is always super friendly. I had the pleasure of staying in their neighborhood for a month or so, and it was just a real treat to have this as my neighborhood coffee shop for a bit. And now I find myself going out of my way to get over there and get some coffee. Puff Coffee was started by the founder of Stumptown Coffee, and they are making small batch coffee roasted daily here in Portland. Their mission: to find, roast, and deliver the most delicious coffees anywhere. Their small batch process means that they get to keep things interesting with experimental blends and single origin gems while always keeping the classics on deck. They've got a variety of beans to choose from, and if you're not in the Portland area, you can order their small batch coffee straight to your home through their website. And you can use the coupon code DANCABLE, all one word, for 20% off a coffee subscription. Links for Puff Coffee will be in the episode notes. Big thanks to Puff for supporting the show and for their amazing small batch coffee. Now let's get into the episode.
Look down at the recording.
What is happening, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Dan Cable Presents podcast. Thank you for tuning into the program once again. If this is your first time listening, thanks for checking out the show. You can find fresh episodes coming at you every Tuesday. And if you want to help support this thing in a free way, you can do so by clicking subscribe on iTunes, clicking write a review, giving the podcast 5 stars if you feel like it is deserving of so, and that will help propel this thing into the tops of those iTunes charts, giving it more visibility on the national and international levels, helping strangers find the podcast, and just a great way to contribute to the growth and sustainability of this thing. Appreciate the hell out of all the folks that have already taken the time to do so. If you're not listening on Apple, just hit like, follow, subscribe wherever you are listening from. Or maybe you're watching on YouTube now and you can hit subscribe there, or give it a rating on Spotify. Tell a friend about the podcast. Check out those monthly playlists that I've been dropping every first of the month on Spotify. Pretty spread out genre wise and just a snapshot of what I'm listening to throughout the month. Some things that are making it into my DJ sets, and the links for all those things will be in the episode notes. Very stoked. Couldn't be more stoked to be dropping episode 400 on you today. And for the people watching on YouTube, you can see that there is a new video element to this thing. I've been dialing this thing in for the last couple months or so. As you can see behind me, I've got this fresh new recording podcast studio space, which has been just so amazing to have. And I've been even the you know, for the last couple of months, the ones that you've been hearing just audio, those have all been recorded in here as of late and been experimenting with the filming of things for the last couple of months as well, trying to get the space dialed in and the lighting and all those things. And yeah, today is kind of the introduction to the new era of podcasts, where we will have consistent video content happening for this thing. So whether you're seeing the clips on social media or actually watching on YouTube, I'm pretty excited to experiment with this. It's been something that I've wanted to have for a long time, and it has felt a little bit daunting to introduce something like this, but I think that the process is getting easier, and it will continue to get easier as I get more reps doing this thing, just like anything else. And I'm just excited to share this episode with you all, which is a retrospective on 400 episodes hosted by my friend Ayal Alves, who was kind enough to bring up the idea of hosting this one for me. I was talking to Ayal about potentially maybe wrapping the podcast up at 400, and that was on my mind for a little while, but things shifted for me, as you will hear in the episode. And I thought it was a good idea either way to do this, and I think Ayal brought out such a great conversation between us, definitely something I couldn't do without Ayal, and I think just gave me this opportunity to really reflect on 400 episodes and how this podcast has shaped my life over the years. And Ayal did such a killer job. I knew that Ayal would do a great job, and just really came through, and I just really appreciated this conversation and the opportunity to chat in this way. And big thanks to Forrest Brennan, who has been helping me dial in the video and the lighting for this room. And we've already made significant changes from what this episode will look like to the ones moving forward, and trying to capture maybe more of this moodiness that you see behind me, and more of this lighting vibe. As you'll see in this conversation, it's a little brighter in here for the chat between Ayal and I, but I think it still looks really great. And it was nice for me to be kind of the first guest, I feel like, for introducing the video elements of things, just so I didn't have to feel a bunch of pressure about how it would come out or any of the mistakes that would maybe happen, perhaps like the camera dying. About 25 minutes into this conversation, the camera died, and it went unnoticed for a bit. And luckily, I have all this B-roll and all of this footage from previous Dan Cable Presents associated events that have happened over the last 8 years. And I was able to chop those things up and place that in that gap of time, which hopefully will be kind of a cool companion as I'm reflecting on 400 episodes to kind of get a glimpse of maybe what those first few years looked like, and some other moments from the podcast when I was doing a lot of studio sessions. Forrest has filmed so many of those sessions, so it was really nice to have him in the room. And I've also gotten a dummy battery. At Forrest's, his recommendation was to get a dummy battery so that the camera never dies again during one of these, and I don't have to worry about it. So that improvement has already been made. I'm using it right now, and it seems to be working well. So there is a little bit of a gap, but hope you enjoy that montage that happens of some past moments from the podcast. And just super appreciative of Forrest's time and his dedication to helping me make this thing look good. Also, Lisa Hagen from the band Babers, past guest of the podcast and just a great human being, was also here, and she captured some photos during the podcast, and they came out so great. Yeah, thanks to Lisa for being here. It was just nice to have some people that I really like in the room for this conversation. And both of them, Forrest and Lisa, just very rad people, and grateful for their support of this thing. What else? DistroKid? Man, special shout to DistroKid for sponsoring this podcast for almost 3 years now. It's really crazy. They were the first major sponsor to jump on board when I quit my day job to pursue this thing a little more full time. And yeah, their support means a lot, and it's a really huge contribution to me being able to have a space to record this thing and to, you know, buy new gear like cameras to make this thing happen for the YouTube and putting out all these clips. So I know I show my appreciation for them in every episode up top, and you already heard about DistroKid, but I really do appreciate their consistent support of the podcast. Thanks to all the past guests of the podcast for your time. Couldn't have done this without y'all and your contributions to the archive of conversations that have been captured over the years. And yeah, just thank you to everybody that's supported the podcast over the years. You know, I want to just definitely thank y'all, whether you're a listener or you're just someone that has continued to support me in my life. That's all contributing to helping me get this thing out every single week. And yeah, gotta give a special thanks to my friends and my family. Special shout out to my cousin Max, who has been listening from the beginning of the podcast and maybe goes harder for this podcast than anyone I know. He's always talking to me about the conversations that have happened, and he's just a consistent follower, I feel like, of the people that he really likes that comes on. He will actually go out and support those people, and I just enjoy having the conversations about the podcast with him. Has been really cool over the years. And big thanks to the strangers out there listening, to those folks that consistently leave comments to me or like slide into my DMs letting me know that they're listening. That is such huge fuel for the fire, and I continue to encourage people to leave those comments, send those emails. Love to hear from you, love to know what you're listening to, things that can go on those playlists that I'm making, or, you know, maybe guests that you want to hear from on the show. All those things are very cool, and I appreciate the feedback from all of it. Yeah, just really wild that this has been the last 8 years of my life. Sometimes it just moves really quickly. So just a very cool opportunity I had to sit down with my friend Ayal and talk about this thing and the way that it has shaped my life. And I'm excited to share it with y'all. And I can't encourage you enough to pursue your ideas and put them in motion. If you've got something going on up in your head and something you feel like you should chase down, just go after it. It's you just never know what the response to something is going to be, or the way that it's going to make you feel once you actually put it out. And it's a scary thing to, you know, to pursue a new idea, but sometimes it leads to 8 years of doing something, or it creates relationships that you did not know were even possible. And I don't even know where to start with all of the things that this has led to in my life, and the relationships that has created, and the opportunities that it has created outside of doing the podcast, and just these opportunities to learn more and more about the industry side of the music business or entertainment itself. And just to consistently get to talk to people about their art is incredibly inspiring for me. And it's something I gravitate towards heavily, especially for inspiring me to keep going. So thank you, everybody. It's a special thing to get to do this week in and week out, and I don't take it lightly. It's a lot of work at times, but I'm consistently grateful for what I get to do with this podcast. And yeah, you got to listen to me ramble for another hour and 20 minutes or so throughout this episode. So I feel like we should get into this thing, and we will open up the comments on that YouTube channel to all the heathens out there to criticize my every move. This is a whole new adjustment to think about the nervous shaking of the legs, my little tics that I will I will see week in and week out because of this thing. But yeah, I think that's all the things, and we'll get in to episode 400 of the podcast. All the links will be in the episode notes, so you can keep up with Aol, the Sarun project. Aol is consistently putting out music, including a new record, Oddities Volume 1, that just dropped. Some really killer tunes, and just like a whole new dynamic being explored by Aol through that that particular record. And I mentioned Gil Ghul, which is the project that Aol and I talked about last on the episode that we did. This incredible instrumental record. And yeah, that's it. All the links in the episode notes. Hit subscribe on the YouTube channel. Let's build a community of kind comments there. Oh man, the brutal ones are coming. For sure. I'm ready for it, though. I'm ready for it. And love you all. Encourage you all to pursue your ideas and see what comes of it. And this is it. Episode 400 of the Dan Cable Presents podcast. It makes moving really fun when you have a bunch of records.
Nice heavy boxes.
Yeah.
Groovy.
All right.
You're running this thing.
I'm running it.
I'm just kidding. I mean, kind of. Are you ready to do it?
Yeah, I'm ready when you are.
All right.
But do you want to introduce it, or what's going on here?
I mean, I'll probably do an intro and post, but okay. I will tell you to start. There has been a few other people who have brought up the idea of interviewing me.
Uh-huh.
For this show, and I've always thought that it was maybe like a cool idea, but you are the first person that asked me that I trust.
Aww.
Like when you brought up the idea, I was like, oh, I feel like AOL will bring out like a thoughtful conversation or have thoughtful questions. Like, I've just appreciated the
pressure's on.
Yeah. I've appreciated the conversations that we have on and off the mic.
Yeah,
and it's been really great to just get to know you over these like last couple of years.
Me too.
Because of this. So, yeah, like I'm happy that you are doing this, and you're like that you brought up the idea.
Yeah,
because I don't know that I would have just asked you to do it.
Totally.
But
yeah, I know it is hard, especially to like to ask somebody to interview you is is a weird proposition.
But I know I was kind of like I don't know, maybe toying with the idea of 400 being the final episode.
Right.
Potentially, and maybe like starting something new. And I don't know. I think my mentality around it just kind of shifted over the last, I don't know, maybe like the last month or two. I've just gotten so excited again about all of the music happening around me and things that we've talked about in the past of just like maybe there not being a whole lot of outlets for things to get shared on the local level. And
yeah,
I just can't imagine not doing this thing. Like it enriches my life. Like
what do you think you like about it so much?
I think that it has allowed me to be a part of this community.
Yeah.
Like I came from playing in a band in Southern California, and we lived in the suburbs, and we would always have to drive like an hour.
Where did you grow
up? Corona, California, which is like Riverside County. It's like 40 miles east of Los Angeles. And our band would just always have to drive out to LA to play shows. Lots of them were like pay to play type situations. And that is not like the type of environment where you build community. So
yeah,
it wasn't until I came here in 2013 that I don't know, I felt like it was, there was an easy access point, I guess, into showing up to things and supporting it, and you just like quickly get to know people. And there's definitely like something I love about walking into any music venue in the city and feel like I'm always going to know at least one person in that room.
Yeah.
If not a handful or more, like your show the other night at the Megalith bookstore, which was my first time going there.
Yeah, that
was
just spot. Like,
yeah, just a great group of people showed up to that. And yeah. Like a lot of people that I really like. And I think there's just also, there's always going to be like this additional layer of attachment to the music that I'm seeing when I get to know these people.
Like, totally.
Like yourself, you know? Like,
yeah.
When, now that I've gotten to spend so much time with you, like when I see you play music, there's, I don't know, it feels more special to me.
Yeah, you feel the extension of the person, and you grok it better on some level, you know. It's like you just, the understanding of the intention of the person comes through, because
yeah,
and you're more forgiving of, you know, you it's nepotism, you know. Yeah. you like the person, so
yeah,
you want to like the things that they do or whatever.
Yeah, and it makes me even like want to support even more.
Yeah.
So
what was your role in those kind of like earlier band experiences?
I was the singer in our band. I played,
like, were you the like primary creative force for the band, or no, was it collaborative?
It was more like my buddy Ryan was the main songwriter. I would contribute lyrics. I wasn't really playing guitar too much at that time. I picked up a guitar when I was 14. So excited to get a guitar.
Yeah.
And then I picked it up and realized that it was going to take so much work. Like, I just didn't feel like I had any natural ability towards instruments at all.
Guitar is one of those that is basically not natural for anybody, you know? Like, the way your muscles work when you pick up that instrument, are, it's like such a different, like, you know, your fingers don't have the calluses, yeah. So it hurts initially, and just like the way those muscle groups work are just not a way that anybody is used to working.
Dude, I was just so discouraged.
Yeah,
picking
just
it up.
The C chord, you're like, how do you even play? Or like a bar, once you start barring chords, you're like, what the fuck?
I just never thought that I would get my hands and my fingers to be able to like make these shapes.
Yeah,
and so I kind of just put it aside.
Yeah,
you know, and then I got introduced to like my longtime childhood friends, and we played in a band for a really long time. And so I would just contribute lyrics, either like complete songs that would be all my lyrics, or I would kind of help Ryan revise his lyrics that were already there,
mm-hmm.
or I would sing his lyrics that he had written for the song. Like, so it was just kind of variations of those things. And then when that band dissolved, that is when I forced myself to learn how to play guitar, because I wanted to keep writing songs.
Yeah.
And when I finally put like a little bit of time into it, I was just like, oh, I can get better at this thing. Like, I can figure out how to train myself to make those shapes with my hands.
And, totally.
And that was like a really cool, I think, moment for me to like realize that. I know it's like pretty common sense that if you put time into something that you will,
yeah, but people don't like, always put the time in,
get better. And like, it's always made sense to me on like, I don't know, athletically, you know, playing hockey all my life, you know, when I put the time and energy into a particular thing, you get totally. Better at that thing. And if you like just keep trying to explore different techniques, then you know, you can get better at these things and find different ways to go about them. So
The guitar, the learning curve is steep, but it's also, once you get past that, there's kind of like a plateau that you can get to where you're like, okay, now I have these like chords that are the basic building blocks of like most of the music that I've listened to in my life. You know, it's like there, a lot of popular music is just not that complex as far as harmony is concerned. So it becomes very accessible pretty quickly, which is how you know, can get plenty of people singing Wagon Wheel to each other or whatever.
I think I definitely still got like kind of trapped in the things that I felt like I had the ability to do on the guitar though, and like I definitely had to like push myself in a lot of different directions to like find
different rhythms and different shapes on the guitar that like weren't always the same, like three things all of the time. But at least it was, I finally like found a way to be able to facilitate my own lyric ideas. And that like finally, I always like talk to these people who were like, yeah, there's no way that I can just like write lyrics and then find a way to apply those later. Often it's usually, you know, while you're playing the instrument that you're coming up with these melodies at the same time. And I never really was able to explore music that way. So it was like the first time I was kind of able to go at it with that angle.
Was music like a thing that you were like a primary pursuit of yours that you're like, this is what I kind of want to be doing at that time?
Yeah. I mean, at least for our band, like we put a lot of energy into trying to push our band. Like, you know, we spent a long time making this big studio record that we dumped a bunch of stupid money into because people didn't like weren't around to like help us advise otherwise. And I think it was also just like a different time where like people didn't make a whole lot of EPs. People made like full length records at that time. Right. So it just like,
or have as much access to like recording on a DIY level.
Shit, I'm just spilling on myself. Look at this. Real cool guy.
First time on the camera.
Yeah, first time being the guest on my own podcast. A little nervous. Yeah, but we were definitely, you know, like pretty active, as active as we could be.
Yeah.
But we were playing all these pay to play shows. And like I said,
what do you think that is? That doesn't build community. Why is that culture more prevalent? Is it just kind of like there are, it's so commercial kind of like around that area that it's, because that is my experience too, where it's, where you'll get these shows where it's not this like group of bands that kind of like put this together for themselves to kind of like bring all the people that they know together into the community, so much as it is like the venue has these opportunities and you show up and then one band's audiences show up and then leave when they're done.
Well,
and then
especially the next band's audience. Yeah, when there's six artists on the bill, because that's, you get a lot of that where it's like, if you don't have one of that, those like second to fourth spots, you're either playing the first slot to not a lot of people, or you're playing the last one to nobody wants to be there at midnight anymore.
Right.
And that was like the fucked up thing is all of those slots were based on how many tickets you sold.
Right.
And you got that preferential treatment. If you did sell the most tickets, then you were playing that middle prime slot when everybody's around. But yeah, there wasn't a lot of the time people weren't sticking around. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Like to watch these other bands, you would just show up for the band you came for and then you would leave. And I think I have found later in my life, as I've met more people that actually live in LA and play shows, maybe in places like Highland Park and like maybe more neighborhood stuff and not just the Hollywood venues, that there was opportunity for those things, but it was too hard to break in because we didn't know any of the other bands playing.
Right. You lived 30 miles away or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. We were living too far out. And I think that the situation for those venues is like, it's good business for like a place like the Roxy or the Troubadour for the nights that they don't have these major headliners coming through. If they are guaranteed money from these promoters.
Right.
So they've kind of like put this monopoly on it almost, like where they're guaranteeing the venue, like, hey, there's going to be at least $5,000 in ticket sales because we got six bands and they are all signed a contract to sell 40 to 75 tickets. Like that just puts them in a really great spot. But it also means that there were literally shows where we had to cover 20 tickets that we didn't sell.
Right.
So you're never making money.
Yeah.
Any money. I remember the shows where we would make like $100. That would be fucking huge for us.
Right. Because it meant so many, like you sold so many tickets.
Or whatever. And that was only certain places that would offer that. Like I remember when we found like there was this place in Newport Beach area called Hoagie Bar Michaels. And it became this venue that we would play a lot because it was like
a sandwich shop.
No, it was this huge bar. And it was pretty cool. And it would kind of became one of those places where we would play a lot because it was in Orange County, which was a little bit closer than LA for us. So it was easier for us to get our friends and family to go. Because that's the other thing with this type of model. You're never building real fans outside of your friends and family.
It's like multi-level marketing or something.
Absolutely. But that place, if you sold 40 tickets or so, they would give you $2 off each of these $10 tickets. And that was like, that was amazing to us. Like, because there were nights where we would sell like 75 to 100 plus tickets. And we were like, we made $200 tonight. And that's amazing.
Yeah. The music industry is so opaque that it's hard to, you know, you see the situations like that are kind of like available to you. And you're like, oh, I guess this is how it must be.
Yeah. We didn't have any other option really. So like when I came to Portland, it blew my mind.
When was that?
In 2013, when I started going and getting to know people that were playing these shows, and even playing a handful of shows I probably played on, like solo shows that I played outside of open mics, when someone gave me money at the end, or like when I found out that there was not like this obligation that I didn't have to sign this contract. And I knew that there was like, there was a few companies trying to weasel their way into Portland doing that type of thing. It may be like the Alberta Rose that people told me about. And I was just like,
You would see that back in the day, like on Craigslist a lot. I feel like where it's like, come play this show at the Crystal Ballroom. Yeah. And it's like, you see the lineup of like 400 bands or whatever that are all pay to play bands. And
it was really exciting to me to,
did you move up here for music?
I moved up here just cause like I had a shift in life. I always wanted to live somewhere else. Like it was, I don't know, just a desire from childhood that I would always move away from my hometown at some point. And I thought it would be for maybe for college, and that didn't really happen. I ended up going, I moved out of my hometown and moved 45 minutes away to live in the dorms. But I also would just go home all the time because it was so close.
Yeah.
You know,
what did you go to school for?
Originally I went for broadcasting communications. I really wanted to be a
success.
I wanted to be a play-by-play announcer for hockey so bad. But then I went to
that's like, I feel like there's a couple skills like that are up there, like stand-up comedian you know, like play-by-play announcer is like such a specific, it's like an auctioneer or something. It's such a specific skill.
Well, it was weird, though, because I went to school for this thing, and the first year of the education was more just based on general communications. It had nothing to do, like, they weren't putting you in front of a microphone. Like, it had nothing to do with, like, this type of thing.
Yeah.
And I was pretty discouraged by that. And also, we were chasing the band thing so hard that it was, like, I lasted for, like, maybe the first year.
Yeah.
And decided not to go back.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I just always had, I always wanted to leave where I grew up.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was like maybe an opportunity for some new growth. I don't know if I like knew exactly what that meant at that time.
Yeah.
But I always had family up in the Pacific Northwest and had visited Portland a few times growing up. And so this just seemed like a good spot to come since there was family up here. So I wasn't going into this place that I did not know anyone, but I didn't like have any, definitely didn't have friends or know anything about the music scene here.
Okay.
Like that just all kind of happened. Like I just started showing up to open mics and started meeting people and started realizing that there is like a pretty like welcoming community for the most part.
Yeah.
Here.
Yeah.
And I was also just pretty blown away by the talent around me, even at these open mics.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like where the idea for the podcast even started, was like, I was already toying with like a few different podcasts that I had like done, but nothing was like really sticking for me. Cause like I still had there's still that kid that like wanted to be the play-by-play announcer. Okay. So like that, like, or wanted to have like the radio show. So my first podcast was called the Dan Cable Hour.
Nice.
In which I thought it was going to be really fun to just have childhood friends on to share stories. And then I kind of realized that like that was fun for me, but probably not super enjoyable for general audience, maybe because none of us had any like celebrity to our name or something. Because I don't know, I fell in love with the podcast medium listening to all these different podcasts, but then I realized like, oh well, these aren't, I'm not just listening to unknown people, these are people that I'm interested either in the host themselves, right, who is bringing these people on,
yeah,
or I'm interested in the guest.
Yeah.
And so
what were the podcasts that were kind of like the ones that you were, would like, did you model yourself after these things, or were they inspirations?
I still go pretty hard for Marc Maron's WTF. Like, that's still in the regular rotation.
Yeah.
I just think those were the types of conversations,
yeah,
that I wanted.
Long form, conversational,
vulnerable stuff at times,
yeah,
funny time at times. Pete Holmes, You Made It Weird, is still in the regular rotation. Like, that's one that I usually try not to miss. And that was like, I think he jokes often about ripping off Marc Maron's style, and he very much like
WTF is kind of the one of the OGs.
So. This may like, this is gonna give me
guilty pleasure.
This is gonna get me some shit.
But Joe Rogan.
I was pretty into Rogan in the beginning, to be honest. Like, and I feel like that show like significantly shifted.
Uh huh. Sure.
And I felt like it was a lot different. And it in all fairness, it like exposed me to so many like ideas that I wasn't like super hip to, like, mm-hmm, people coming on and talking about psychedelics for 2 or 3 hours, and like really made me curious about a lot of things. And he was also just bringing on like a lot of comedians that, yeah, I loved. And I think something weird happened there with that.
Didn't it was more exist. Open-minded conversations versus proselytizing viewpoints and,
yeah,
things of that nature.
Yeah. It wasn't, that wasn't how the show always was.
Yeah.
So like, I think even talking to my buddy London, he did like the 200th episode and asked me, and I think I was still maybe like, when he asked me, I was like, yeah, the Rogan podcast for sure.
Yeah.
I think it was also just like the candid type of conversation, yeah, that was happening too, like where it didn't feel very scripted. And yeah, I was like very inspired by that.
Yeah.
And now like it's,
plus
heart.
Fear Factor is your favorite show.
Yeah, I love Fear Factor. I love Fear Factor. But now it's like, that's definitely,
you can't
like,
get enough people eating bowl testicles. What did they do in that show?
Yeah, it was stuff like that, eating bugs and whatnot,
sitting in a bed of snakes or something.
But like the Maron stuff is still, yeah, like regular listening. The Pete Holmes, like, yeah, those types of conversations. But then
so also, your sports or your childhood friend thing, that was one attempt at podcasting.
Yeah, then my buddy and I did a sports podcast for a while, and that was cool too. I think I like didn't really know how to make that as interesting as maybe I would like take a run at it now.
Yeah.
I've like also done like brief episodes of hockey podcasts that I've tried, yeah, to get off the ground, yeah, but I don't know. There seemed to be like, when I started this, even from episode one, which is, geez, I don't know that I could listen back to, yeah, that. There seemed to be like this reception to it that I was like, oh, maybe this is like a cool thing that I can just talk to local artists, because these are not the type of people that often get to share their story.
Totally.
You know, and there seemed to be a lot of room for that. And
yeah,
it was like, I don't know, it seemed just as interesting to me personally to hear someone that's like very unknown to the rest of the world's musical background, or like hear about like what influences their art, as much as like listening to some of my favorite artists go on a show.
Totally.
You know, it seemed as valuable.
Yeah. I mean, that for me, I feel like with my podcast too, that was kind of like one of the main motivations, is that it's like, we live in this culture that is so celebrity obsessed. And like you're saying, like there is this like buy-in that happens as a result of that. So it's like a balance of kind of like popularity versus not having popularity is like, I think, useful when you're kind of like building something for yourself. Cause it's obviously, if the person is popular, yeah, they're going to draw some people towards, or just like a show, you know, you put together a bill for a show, and it's nice to have a mix of like people that are going to bring people to the show, but also like this person that you think is an amazing musician that nobody's ever heard of. And,
yeah.
And my personal take on it is not that, you know, the person that draws more people is like inherently like contributing something more valuable to the culture, like you're saying, anything like that, so much as they've for whatever reason tapped into the ability to,
yeah,
draw these people. So And for myself personally, having a podcast that was kind of focused on like the creative side of things, literally creation of songs, I personally have been very interested in encouraging this culture gets so narrow with like who we think of as artists. And, I just don't buy any of that. Like, I think everybody has a musical instinct inside of them. Everybody has like artistic instincts inside of them. And, if they want to express those things, they, you know, have the ability to pursue those things on whatever level and have the ability to create things that are valuable for,
yeah,
at the very least for themselves. Like, and so I think if you platform people, mm-hmm, in those positions, then it kind of encourages the wider audience to kind of see themselves as somebody who can make a beat or whatever,
yeah,
or do those kind of things.
Yeah. But I don't know. I think definitely from the beginning, I think maybe what helped is I was really, and still try to do this thing where like I only invite people on to have conversations that I can genuinely talk, yeah, about their thing.
Yeah.
You know, like I don't have to fake it. I, yeah, don't have to pretend that I like your music.
Totally.
You know, if I asked you to come do this show, it's because like I genuinely believe in what you're doing, or it has moved me, or even if I don't maybe love the songwriting, I respect the musicianship.
Totally.
You know?
And so, yeah. It's like after a show, like, you know, versus saying like, good job, like finding something that you genuinely like appreciate about what the person did on stage that,
yeah,
you can kind of like reflect back to them.
Yeah.
You know, it's so easy to kind of, yeah, give this kind of like empty praise, or I feel like if you do start inviting guests that are, not in your kind of like wheelhouse or whatever, or you just only for this like cynical reason of like maybe this person will like bring an audience to me or something like that,
yeah,
then it just ends up adding this layer of cynicism to your art, which is like this podcast.
Yeah, for sure. And I just love like all kinds of music, and I think maybe I started this podcast like at the right time for myself, where I was like really open to maybe other kinds of music that I didn't really have an understanding for yet.
Mm.
Like I started this right around the time I got more open and into jazz and, mm-hmm, like electronic music. And, mm-hmm, and so like, I feel like, I don't know, I think I maybe became the right person to be able to share a bunch of different genres of music too.
Mm.
Like I wasn't just going to talk to the singer songwriters, like I love rap music, I'm gonna bring on the local rappers, and,
yeah,
like I'm going to talk to the DJs and the,
yeah,
people making the weird experimental music, and,
yep,
but also like the straight ahead pop music too.
Yeah. And Portland music, I feel like, has also only gotten more diverse in that regard. Like,
yeah,
it just feels like it's open. Like when I first moved here, it really felt like it was like an indie rock town, you,
yeah,
know. I don't know what your experience,
yeah, yeah,
was. It, of,
I think
of
I
that.
Think that was pretty like similar.
Yeah,
there's a lot of like the indie DIY garage stuff, the,
yeah,
psychedelic rock. And,
yeah,
but yeah, it blows me away like how much you could go find any genre of music in this city and find somebody that's doing it,
yeah,
on a really high level. In like my opinion, I guess, but.
So yeah, when you started the podcast, then was that you were like, this is my thing now?
Yeah, I think it slowly became that, you know, I just loved it so much. Like it felt like, you know, like it still makes me somewhat uncomfortable sometimes that maybe people do view me as media in the,
uh-huh,
city, because like, to me, this is like my art.
Yeah.
It replaced making music,
yeah,
in a lot of, like, I don't really like make much music, and if I do play music, it's usually just like on my own time for me kind,
yeah,
of thing.
Well, you do it all yourself too, so that obviously,
yeah,
takes,
yeah, it
a
takes
lot
a lot of time
behind,
too,
beyond this element of it.
But it filled a similar like hole, I guess.
Totally.
Like it just
well, conversations are like jazz, man.
And yeah, just like getting my reps in and like figuring,
yep,
out how to facilitate a conversation in a way that hopefully like brought out good things. And
did you feel like you had a natural like ability with that already, or was it kind of feeling like I really need to like learn how to do the host thing? Or the
I think that like I've always maybe felt confident in some way as far as hosting something. Like
when you heard those, you know, Marin or whatever, where you're like, oh, I could do that.
Maybe. Like, yeah. I think I've always like enjoyed like sitting and talking with somebody for a couple hours, you know, and maybe talking about a very wide range of things. Like, I mean, that's why I love doing the podcast. Like, there's nothing better than like trapping my favorite artist in a room for a couple hours and then like getting to talk with them, because they it changes the attachment, but it also like changes the dynamic of our relationship when I see these people at a show.
Totally.
Like, it's not, I'm usually not just like one of the people that's like, oh, good show. It's like,
right,
hey, like,
we actually,
we kind of know each other. We talked about things.
Why you hate your mom or whatever.
Yeah. So like, I think that I felt like there was a little bit there, like there was more natural ability there than me picking up a guitar for the first time. And also like, I think I felt like maybe it wasn't as fine tuned as it is now, maybe, but I think because I was really trying to study the music in some way of anybody that I was bringing on, I felt like I was hopefully bringing good questions. I knew that it was very important to me to not ask questions that were applicable to everyone necessarily, or like these very stock
the ones that
questions.
Yeah. Why did you come up with this name for your band or whatever?
I almost never asked that question. There's very few times that I've asked, and it's like usually because of a reason.
Yeah.
And maybe those questions can be more interesting for certain types of people.
It's also like, if you are a relatively unpopular band, you probably haven't been asked the stock questions as much also.
That is also true. But yeah, like, I think always trying to have some sort of model that made it. I wanted the people that were coming on, and I still obviously want this now, to know that I put the time in. Like, that I wasn't just bringing you on to ask you these questions that I didn't put a lot of thought into.
Yeah.
Like, I want to be able to dive deep if it allows for that.
Yeah.
Or just
feeling a little exposed, because I'm kind of the opposite. I mean, not that I want them not to feel like I care, but I don't, preparation, I think Marin is also this way a little bit, kind of like, it's not necessarily, I mean, I'll definitely like musicians, like I'll listen to their music ahead of time, but you really seem like you maybe have even developed a kind of different way of listening to stuff, where now you're kind of like thinking about like how you're going to engage with the person as a result of the music.
Dude, yeah, you can't. Every time I'm at a show now, I'm usually making notes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't not make notes.
Yeah.
Because I'll be like, oh, this is like probably a good thing to talk to this person about, you know, and whether it's mentally or physically. Like, I probably like look rude a lot because I'm like,
no way,
making my notes while I'm like watching this person perform.
Everybody's like, oh, he's just a journalist.
Or I just look like a fucking nerd. Like, that, like, if anybody's poking over my shoulder, I'm like, oh, I love
it. At least
you're
not like me.
That.
I have a physical notepad. So
you look like a journalist. Yeah. I just look like I'm on my phone. And I'm just like, oh, during the third song in that set, when you switched to the other guitar, like, that was a moment.
Yeah. But well, like, that's similar to like how, you know, a songwriter or whatever, like anybody, a comedian, you know, if you don't write down these ideas, like they do just kind of like go away. So,
yeah. You know. I mean, that's always also been super important to try to see someone's band or their performance live before having the chat, if possible. It doesn't always work out that way, but it does shape the conversation a lot, like seeing the live performance.
So do you feel though like the way you listen to music has maybe changed as a result of the podcast,
or only
if you're kind of like listening to the music for the podcast, then
maybe it's more like listening with that intent of knowing someone's coming on. But I think even maybe with like some of the people on my bucket list, when I'm listening to their records, there's little things happening for me, even if I'm like never going to talk to them, I'm like, oh, I want to know about this. Mm. Or like, yeah, I just know. Your
brain's starting to just kind of go in that direction.
Yeah, and maybe more specific for the artists with more substantial followings that do have the opportunity to do more press. Mm-hmm. I feel like I always want to find something that they haven't been asked before,
or that's not on their press release.
Yeah, or find a way to expand, because that's some shit I usually don't do.
Yeah,
is I will not, in that Marc Maron spirit, I don't want to read a bunch of stuff
totally
that has been written about you before, because I don't want to ask questions I already know the answer to.
Yeah,
like I think that maybe there's an art to that too, as far as like finding the thing in that paragraph that I can expand upon, and that feels different. And there have been moments where I'm like, oh, thank God I read a couple things, because this really informed where I was going to take the conversation.
Yeah.
So it's like finding the balance between those things. But yeah, I don't want to like read a press release and then be like, so what was your first lead instrument? And you like already kind of know, like,
yeah,
I don't know. There's right ways to do that as well, but I don't know. Yeah. Just always trying to let people know that I listened to their music and I care about it on a deep level, and like maybe having a lot of notes for sure, but not being attached to them of like that the conversation has to go this way. It's kind of more just like, if I need to rely on these notes, like hopefully I don't need to, and I'm only using them to like reference specific things. Like when you and I did the Gil Ghul episode, like I want to be able to like say the title of the song to prompt you to talk about this song.
Right.
Obviously. But like, hopefully I don't have to use the notes a lot, but sometimes you do because people
are bad at talking.
Yeah, there are. I mean, you and I are both like have this experience of like talking to a lot of local artists where maybe it is their first time talking on a mic, and they're a little shy, or like it's hard to get people to talk about themselves sometimes, and they're not comfortable with it. So
yeah,
that's when you really learn about not having a bunch of questions that can be answered with yes or no.
Totally.
That'll shape some things for you.
You go through everything, you're like 10 minutes in and you're like, I got nothing.
Yeah, because I'm always gonna, like after one of those episodes, I'm gonna blame myself for not asking the right questions.
Totally.
And I think that there is some accountability.
That's being a gracious host.
I think there's some like accountability that you should take in those situations, but yeah, sometimes it is because that person didn't have a lot to say, or they were a little shy. Sometimes it is on them. But yeah, that has definitely made me think about how I shape my notes and my questions. I'm like, oh man, this is not good. This can be answered with yes or no.
Yeah.
And reflecting back and listening back to that episode, I'm like, yeah, I asked a lot of those questions. So that was kind of on me.
What were the early experiences like with doing the podcast? Did you feel like a lot of momentum as you were kind of like building the thing?
Well, there's like, number one, I had this very punk rock mentality of it, that we hit record and everything stayed in.
Oh yeah. The Joe Rogan way.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly. And then I realized fucking Maron's definitely having some editing done to these parts of the conversations that weren't interesting.
Totally.
So like that definitely was something that was happening in the beginning, where, you know, maybe these unnecessary moments or questions that led nowhere were left in. And
you were doing like live performances too early on, right?
I was trying to do that KEXP model was so big, because I was doing all studio sessions pretty much, like the first 75 episodes. I would say like 50 out of the 75 were all studio sessions. Every once in a while I was meeting like touring bands at the venue.
Yeah.
But everything was pretty much done at this studio, and there would be three songs performed throughout the thing.
Yeah.
Which I found later, like I think that was really cool.
Yeah.
I would love to have some element of live performance again.
Yeah.
But I would never try to do the interview at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was too distracting. All the, like, I think the maybe the artists at times were too worried about what things were sounding like musically to be locked into a conversation. So like I just found that there was way more freedom when I got rid of that situation and was just sitting down and talking with people, and then I could still reference the music. It kind of left things a little more open-ended, where like at that time, and even when I stopped doing the studio sessions and was just doing the interviews, I would find like I would play a song at the beginning to kick off the episode, which I always still do. And then and then I would find like a natural break, not natural break, I guess. Like I would find a way somewhere in the middle of the conversation to be like, all right, now we're going to hear this song from you. And then that would play and we'd go back to the conversation.
Yeah.
But then I just started realizing that like that was just kind of interrupting things. And if I was referencing these songs anyways and we weren't doing the live sessions, that I could just bring these songs in whenever I wanted to. And that was like a big game changer, because that was like when I got to flex like the production skills and I got to create moments, which became my favorite thing.
It becomes more of an art form.
Yeah, it wasn't until the pandemic that I thought that that was going to be more useful, because I was doing so much stuff remotely and there was so much like bullshit to like account for, like Zoom delays and talking over each other. And if we were on separate feeds, then I could just like remove my voice from me talking over somebody, or I could remove the,
kind of a magic in that.
I like, you know, like just people stumbling over words. Like I could just make it a more enjoyable conversation through the production. And that didn't like happen until the 200th episode or whatever, where I was like really leaning into the editing and like realizing that I could just make something that like flows really well. And that's what's most enjoyable. And it doesn't need to be this super punk rock mentality of like, we hit record and that's whatever is said is said. And cause it's just like not that interesting listening to a question that leads nowhere.
Yeah. We've just talked about how like right now it feels like there's this kind of like vacuum. There's kind of like these like go-to places that people go to for music journalism necessarily in town right now. Although there are more and more, it seems like individuals kind of like creeping into those spaces these days. But when you started, there definitely were kind of like these established, you know, there's like the couple of weeklies, there's like, you know, an established like music journalism magazine, stuff like that.
Vortex was pretty prominent then.
11 was going. There are a couple of things that were kind of like fairly,
and you know, I know 11 is trying to make a return,
nice,
which is great. Like I hope, like at the very least, I know that they're trying to become more active on social media, sharing what shows are happening, and I think even small things like that are beneficial.
It's great. But at the time where you like, did you feel as you were starting up, like you were kind of like creating a space for yourself, or did you always kind of like feel like this kind of like outsider outside of that kind of, you know, go-to space?
No, I think I felt like I was like creating my own space, but I also, I don't know, for some reason, my mentality was always that those things could all benefit one another instead of seeing them as competition. And I got really lucky with like someone like Chris Young, who founded Vortex Music Magazine. Man, he championed my shit so hard.
Nice.
And like that was so nice, because like I looked up to him a lot, and like I felt like he built something that was like a big contributor to the culture. And they were doing a lot of cool things, and he would just, you know, let me spotlight the podcast however I wanted to. Like if I wanted to do a write up for one of the episodes, he would let me put it in, because like I also have somewhat of a journalism background. I like writing a lot.
Yeah.
And that was just like ended up being an easy companion to like the episodes that I was dropping.
Totally.
And I was maybe able to expand upon certain things, maybe do what I do in an introduction of an episode, like a little more extensively. And man, I give Chris like a lot of praise still now. Like he just like gave me opportunities. Like he is the reason that I got to start hosting all of the Pickathon interviews for them. Like he put my name in the hat for things like that. But so like I felt like I was creating my own thing, but I wanted to try to collaborate as much as possible. Like, I think I wanted to let everybody know that at least on my end, I didn't see the other things as a threat or competition.
Totally.
Like, it all just felt like, well, we all need our things to grow so that they continue to grow.
Like, yeah.
It doesn't, like, especially if we're covering like a lot of the same artists or something, like,
yeah.
So I don't know that. I think it all always felt like, yeah, building my own thing, but wanting to contribute to the other things if possible.
Yeah.
Or like very open to sharing my things on other platforms if possible. And,
what do you think has kept you kind of going the whole time?
Good
habit,
question.
Habit.
Number one is like, it's become like a discipline thing.
Yeah.
I think for myself to see how many weeks I can do of this consecutively. Like, still haven't missed a week since July of 2016 when I went to like a weekly format.
Yeah.
And so I think like it's a personal thing. Like, I don't think anybody listening is going to be like, what the fuck? Like, the episode didn't come out this week.
Yeah.
But it's like, for me, it's been good structure, I think, for my life of like figuring out how to knock this thing out each week. And I think it's helped me in a lot of ways, like, know that like discipline can be a good thing for your life in some ways. And but the other thing is that I love having the conversations.
Yeah.
And there's no shortage of great music happening in this city.
Yeah.
So it's easy to like continue to find inspiration. And like, I just want to see how far I can kind of like push this thing and how I can get better at it and how I can feel even more comfortable when I do get to talk to like some bucket list artist of mine when I'm sitting in the room with them and hopefully not just like freaking out the whole time.
Yeah.
Those.
Do you feel that when you're having conversations? You ever had those moments where you're just kind of like too outside of yourself, looking at yourself, looking at.
I think it happened more early on. Like, I think episode 13 was one of my first opportunities to talk to a bigger band, and that happened too early for me.
Uh-huh.
Where I'd like just kind of fanboyed, and like I had a much better conversation with that band.
The Chris Farley. That was awesome.
Yeah. Like, I was just like, yeah, your music's cool. I had one of those experiences where I had this really great conversation about the band with their manager before getting to talk to the singer of the band.
Uh-huh.
And then it like, yeah. And then I just kind of fanboyed, and it wasn't my finest work.
Yeah.
Like, now I think I feel like I've done this so much. Like, I still get nervous for sure before episodes.
Yeah.
You know, before recording, sometimes I get nervous, or like I get that feeling of anxiety where I'm kind of like, I hope they cancel. And then like after I'm just like, I can't believe I wanted that to not happen.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. But yeah, it's definitely, I think with doing this 400 times, like, I feel pretty comfortable and I feel usually pretty prepared. So there's not a lot to be anxious about, but it's still weird when it's like someone that you've been listening to for years and you're finally talking to them, and you have to just like realize that they're just a person.
Yeah.
And that type of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard I wonder what that is sometimes, like that kind of like, I guess it is that kind of like cult of personality or something. You've created the psycho, whatever, parasocial relationship with the person already.
Yeah.
And have these expectations of what they're going to act like.
Well, and it's just like you connect with people differently too, right? Like sometimes there's this instant chemistry with these people.
Yeah.
And sometimes there's not, and it takes a lot of work to, it's not until 20 minutes into the interview where you feel like, all right, now we're hitting on something.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but you have thought about quitting, you said, or I don't know if that was before we were talking on the mics, but
yeah, I was trying to, I think I was maybe just trying to like figure out if there was like the next thing, just like any artist that's like, maybe they start a new band or something, but
It seemed like you were going through some like life shifts in general also around when you were thinking about that kind of stuff too.
But I think that, I don't know, man, this is like, this is currently, and I guess has been for the last better part of like 10 years almost, that this is the way I know how to contribute to community, I think. Mm-hmm. And like, it still feels good to be doing that. And I want to keep doing that.
Yeah.
And I want, there's still plenty of, there's a whiteboard over there that fell down earlier. Like, there's a list of artists on there that I really want to have on this podcast still. And like, I feel like there's a lot that can still be done. And as we lose more and more resources to have journalism or like outlets to spotlight this music community or art community, like, I want to make sure that I'm still contributing to that if I still have the energy to do it. And I feel like I do. You know, I think that there was like a lot of thought, and maybe like maybe as more video stuff happens, I will do what I talked about and maybe go down to 2 episodes just because there's going to be more work for me to do, or maybe I'll be able to find people that can help me. 'Cause that's the other thing, is that I'm doing this all by myself. It would be different if I was not also editing every single episode.
You could just sit down at like the mics and
doing the social media. Yeah. If I was just showing up and doing the podcast and then someone else took care of all that shit, then it would probably also put me in a different space. And I hope,
could you let them know?
That's the other thing. I don't know that I could. I don't know.
Doing it so long yourself.
Well, it's just like anybody making their own record that like makes their own artwork, and you have a different attachment to those things.
Yeah.
But I think I do aspire to have like a crew, or at least maybe even one person in the future, because there's other things I want to do with my life.
Totally.
Or there has to be, man, I quit my day job almost 3 years ago to do this like full time.
Yeah.
And I think like I'm proud that I have been able to sustain that for so long.
Yeah.
But like, I can't get by on what I'm getting by on now for the rest of my life.
Right.
So like there's going to come a time where like I do need probably help to figure it out in a way where I can keep pumping out the same amount of content, you know?
Yeah.
'Cause I think it's more of like the other labors that made me think about stopping doing this. 'Cause I still have the passion. Like, I'm not going to just stop loving music.
Totally.
And I still love that feeling, especially with like newer people. Like, it's been so important to me to not get pigeonholed into these people that I have known in the scene for like 5 years.
Yep.
And it was really coming out of the pandemic, like the lockdown shit, that really re-energized me in general. Uh-huh. Like, I was meeting all these new artists in town, and it's like really important to me that I keep my ears open to these newer people coming up. And maybe it's not like after their first show, like I want to make sure that they're hanging around. But if like someone's making a new record, I probably want to talk to them about it. So like, there's going to be no shortage of that. And I don't want to like always be only talking to this network of people, or
totally, you know, like, I love that. I feel like that is something that as a musician, people, it's easy to get, you know, you know these certain people or whatever, and it's so easy to kind of like be like, okay, this is like, I'm a part of this small, you know, community or whatever. But Portland in particular has just such, like I was saying earlier, like a wide range of people doing such different things that it's fun to be able to like branch out and be able to like explore these different things, or set up shows with somebody whose like sound maybe is like a little different than yours or something like that, but might still have, you know, the same energy around music that you have. Or
there's just always this new pocket of people that I have not met before. And like, some of those people have been doing it for a really long time. Like, totally. As I get to know people more, that even that you're connected to, like someone like Mike Gamble, like I've known about like Mike's work, but now I'm like slowly starting to get to know Mike a little bit. And I'm like, this dude's been doing this for a really long time. Like, I got to get Mike on the podcast.
Yeah.
Or like Farnell Newton just did the podcast recently. That dude's like a legend of this city to me, like as far as I'm concerned, like for like what he's contributed and like what his kind of his resume prior you know, and like I've been wanting to have him on the podcast for a really long time, but it just like just recently happened. So there's like so many older heads and newer people are obviously always entering the scene. So
it seems like you're also kind of starting to steer in the direction also of like music, not just performance artists, but like people that are kind of in the broader music scene.
Yeah, I want to talk to like the people running labels, and I want to talk to photographers and like anybody that's like adjacent, like I don't know, I want to talk to people about their art, like especially the people that do this like with a majority of their time, or you know, that are consistently putting things out, you know, or like even people that like work at venues or tour managers and stuff like that. I think all of it is interesting to me, so as long as that is true, then I'm like down to jump on the mics, you know. It might not be for everybody, you know. There might be some nerding out on a level that people don't always appreciate, but I think I'm like always trying to at least find a way to like,
you gotta alienate humanize your audience,
I'm trying to find ways to like humanize the guests so that there is something to latch up onto, because like that's like a big reason that I love doing the podcast is like I love going to see the singer-songwriters that do talk about their songs. It's like why I fell like for Isabel's music, you know. She's like such a good, outside of her amazing tunes, like she's always this person that exposes a lot about her songwriting when she has the opportunity to.
Yeah.
And those moments have been so important to me as far as like me having something else to attach to. So like when you have an hour to do that type of thing, or 2 hours to just like talk to somebody, hopefully something in there, even if somebody doesn't love the music going into it, maybe they find something in that conversation that like makes them want to support this person, even if it wasn't like necessarily their vibe.
Right. And that, I feel like that's why, only have on people that you can, that you actually care about in that way. Cause then you can find, you already have those in you, so you can help show that to other people.
Exactly. Yeah.
Why do you, why music? Like, why do you feel like that is the thing that you went towards with this whole thing?
Just big music lover, as like early memories of, you know, being in the car with my dad, I just seemed to like latch on to lyrics like really early on, and was just singing in the car at a very early age. I have this like very vivid memory of my dad loved music. He never really like played it, but he was always playing music like very loudly at home or in the car. And I remember him showing me this very specific moment in this live Phil Collins record. And like Phil is still my ride or die to the day. But I remember him showing me this like really specific like drum break moment. And I think that like even at an early age like sunk in there a bit, you know? It like made me and you know, it wasn't, I don't even think it was the In the Air Tonight thing, but it was like a very similar moment. And I think there was just like something about that that had an impact on me. And it always, I always like as a younger person felt pretty like emo, I guess, like in a way that like I used these things to process the world around me. Like even if it wasn't my words, you know, I would really rely upon these things that like helped me understand the world or like deal with the world in some way.
Yeah.
And it's just incredibly, you know, it's moving to me.
Yeah.
Like I go to a performance and a lot of times like I have a pretty emotional response to it. And like that might be like a super fun band that makes me want to dance, and like, or like a punk band that's like, I'm still jumping in the circle pit like a fucking idiot.
Yeah, nice.
Like I love that just as much as going to see a very like emotional, intimate performance. And yeah, there's just, I don't know, there's still a lot of, there's so much magic in it to me.
Yeah.
And just when you, especially now that I've gotten like this insight on so many different people's processes, like it feels even more magical to me, you know.
What do you mean?
I think to just like get to know someone like yourself and then see you perform, I'm just like, I can't believe like you're able to do this thing, like, and that you're inspired to create things like this, uh-huh. inspired to create, or you and I have both had the pleasure of, like, you know, you're obviously, like, you're playing on this record, but those 2 weeks at Ryan's studio, like, making Isabel's new record, like, just to observe that shit mm-hmm. was like, that was easily like the two of the best weeks of my year.
Yeah.
You know, like, that, it was incredible. And yeah. just to, like, listen to everybody's thoughts on things and how everybody is trying to contribute. And yeah, there's just a lot of magic.
The triumph of the human spirit.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just, like, inspired by these people, whether it's their full-time job or whether it's something they just do on the side. These people, especially as we get older, the people that continue to feel like they have to make time totally. To make their art.
Yeah.
You know, I think is just incredibly inspiring yeah. to me. And I was just talking to this dude, Slick Devious, who's a local rapper. And he was talking about how maybe if you aren't a creative type or feel like you need to create all the time, even if you have a full-time job, that maybe you don't have as much perspective of how finite our time is here.
Yeah.
And that hit pretty heavy too, of just like, yeah, this is like, I don't know, not to feel like I'm going to, like, leave behind this incredible legacy or something, but I do think it's rad that if the digital age holds up over time, that there's going to be at least 400 episodes for someone to look back upon. And I want to keep making things to document my life in some way.
Yeah.
And nice. This seems like a pretty fun way to get to do it, where mm-hmm. I get to, like, champion someone else's thing too.
Totally. That is also, you know, even if you're of the kind of, like, in, like, a cynical mindset, like, it's part of what, like, creative community is about, is kind of, like, propping other people up. And I feel like you can even, you know, obviously develop, like, this whole thing for yourself.
Yeah.
Like, that all revolves around, like, helping other people, or, yeah, even just, yeah, like you're saying earlier, like, going to shows is just, like, such a valuable contribution, because the musicians need somebody to play for,
yeah, yeah,
or,
yeah.
you know, taking pictures at shows or whatever, just saying nice things to people or anything like that is just, like, such a value. Even if, like, that's the only thing you do, if you do it over and over again, you ended up, that's, you know, I personally, as, like, an introvert, like, I, you know, don't, I'm not necessarily, like, at shows, like, talking to people and having, like, these, like, I don't really go to shows to socialize. Like, I go to shows to see the music.
Yeah.
And oftentimes, like, I'll just go to the show and, like, leave, like, without yeah. having talked to anybody. But, you know, you do that enough times and, like, you end up being, like, a person that goes to shows so right. that people, like, recognize in the community and is, like, contributing in that way. And just the act of doing something like that over and over again is just the positive way to contribute.
Yeah. There's definitely a lot of, like, selfish elements to it for totally. Myself. You know, like, I just love being there. And I do, like, I don't know, I thrive in social environments.
Yeah.
You know, I think a lot of that is maybe, like, watching the way that my grandma has, like, moved through the world. She's just, like, this person that I look up to so much. And I remember even going to her house at a young age, and we would walk around town, and she just seemed to know everybody.
Mm.
You know, she was just that person.
Yeah.
And I thought that was so cool.
Yeah.
And not, like, as a popularity thing. Like, she totally. Seemed to, like, people were like, there's Winnie. Oh my God. Like, and they were excited about seeing her.
Happy to
and,
see her. Yeah.
Yeah. And to this day, like, she moved to Portland, Oregon in her, you know, late 70s.
Yeah.
And she has found a way to do that here too. And right. like, that's even more impressive to me.
Right.
That she could do it at an older age.
Yeah.
You know, and
you can contribute without, it's like, you don't have to do these, like, large acts of contribution. You know, it can just be these small ways of showing up for the people around you over and over again. And it can have such a positive effect on other people's lives just because you are a positive presence, you know, randomly in their life, like, not best yeah. friends with them, not, you know, like, close or anything like that, but just, like, a positive force.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's crazy, man. Like, I have I've created like some of my deepest friendships is because I did this stupid podcast.
Yeah.
You know, like it's completely changed the trajectory of my life. Like when I think about my closest friends, they're all people I've met because I showed up to do this thing or showed up to the shows.
Yeah.
And it's like mind blowing to me that like close friends with like even someone like yourself, where I like just really like appreciate you as like a creative mind, but like then getting to know you as like a person and
yeah.
like those things are special to me. Everybody in this room, like like Lisa is like a newer friend, and Lisa is here taking photos. She plays in a band called Babers, and she's amazing. But I feel like she and I like connected very quickly because I feel like we're kindred spirits in the sense that we love like community and like love the social aspects of it. Like we will go to a show and like see the music, but also find some time to talk. And like I love that. Like there's yeah. and then I get to like meet her circle of people, and like Forrest is here, and like I've known this dude for like 8 years now. He shot, like we were talking about it earlier, he was like when he started filming when we were doing those studio sessions, that was like episode 30, and I've known him ever since. And like it's like someone I will go out of my way to like try and keep up with, whether there's like a project to talk about or not. Like I just like enjoy that presence, you know, and like I like love to catch up every once in a while. And like he happened to get to be on my video crew for a pickathon like last year.
Yeah.
And like that was just like, oh, this is fucking so cool, like so serendipitous that it's you that gets to be this person, someone that I'm like
yeah
super comfortable with, and I feel like we can just have fun.
Yeah.
And like also inspired that this dude is like still doing all of this video work and constantly like finding different avenues to like do those things, and like and is someone that's like willing to come here and help me too.
Yeah.
Because that's like been, that's the thing I have to like continue to be better at, is like asking for help with all yeah. these things, because I am doing it by myself. And like, yeah, I'm just like really appreciative of the relationships that have been created because of this. And I yeah. know that's only, I think the coolest thing about those things, it's like not just about me showing up, it's about both of these people showing
totally.
Up to do the thing.
Yep.
You know,
collaboration. Like, that's
yeah, and
like,
it's like a different form of collaboration.
Yeah.
You know, like you and I only meet if we were both going after things we were passionate about.
Yeah.
And that's fucking, like, that's the magic.
Totally.
That yeah. shit's special to me.
And, yeah, I love what you're saying, too, about kind of, like, people that have been doing it for a long time, too, is, like, I feel like, and this is where you're at, too, with this, obviously, having done 400 of these, like, you see people that are kind of, like, consistent in that way, and they, I feel like, become beacons for other people to look at and be like, okay, this is a way of life that, it's like I was saying earlier about kind of like encouraging a culture where people are pursuing their art or whatever, even if regardless of the notoriety.
Yeah.
It's like there are plenty of examples, especially in Portland, where so many people have art as a way of life, where they've just been doing this because that is their identity,
yeah.
their, you know, their passion, whatever connection they have with the thing is driving them. And then the younger people can look at yeah. that as an example of a way to possibly do it themselves by just persisting.
Yeah. And like, by way of all of this stuff, like I'm by no means an expert in the music industry, but because of all of this, I've had like a lot of exposure to different facets of the industry.
Right.
And it means so much to me that, you know, someone will hit me up and they'll be like, hey, can I just come through and we talk about my new record that's coming out and just get your ideas about maybe not just the music, but like how I'm going to roll it out. And like, it's just like crazy to me that someone would even
yeah.
ask me to be a part of that process.
Yeah.
And I love it. It's
yeah.
fun.
Yeah.
And it's, and I just feel, yeah, fortunate or blessed to even be like, have the opportunity to be in those types of rooms, or mm-hmm. be asked to be, you know, be requested that my presence is yeah. there, or like someone even thought of.
Well, it makes you realize how much, you know, music is this way, but it kind of is the world that feels like this way, where it's like the people that you think are experts are also just figuring it out all the time for themselves. Yeah. There aren't like clear paths towards one specific goal. There's not like one way to do the thing themselves, and you have expertise because you've just been doing this over and over again, and you have some big exposure and experience with these things.
Yeah. And I think I've always been like a pretty compassionate person, but this has made me even more compassionate, and just made me realize how important perspective is, and especially like trying to create something that is like very inclusive, like not only genre wise but just like the different types of people coming on, and then like getting closer to those people, even if it's that 2-hour conversation. Maybe they like make me realize how important this representation is, or like this particular issue in the world. And like when you have those opportunities, I think it's like it's easier to understand those things, mm-hmm. or like want to care about them too. Yeah. So it's just, it's like when I think about it, cause often it's a little bit of a blur putting out an episode every single week and doing it by myself. And
you could, I mean, this many episodes, you can be like, you could forget you had people on that you've already had on.
I mean, luckily I think like doing the editing myself is, like, I'm thankful that I'm doing the editing, because often that's my opportunity to listen to the conversation, because you know about like
you're in it,
you're trying to be in the conversation, but you're also trying to lead a conversation. So there's a little bit of like headspace that has to be
what's next
in that realm of things. So often like the editing process is where I get to like really listen. And
I know sometimes you'll like hear something and you're like, oh, I didn't even listen to what the person said earlier, or they like sneak a comment by you that was like funny or something and you didn't even realize it, or
but it's like those, because it is so fast paced and always churning out the next one, like in reflecting back on this time, like I just I'm just kind of like in disbelief sometimes how much this has like shaped me as a person. Like the things I do care about in the world are like really attached to this thing, and it has nothing to do with the music all the like
totally
at times, you know. It's just the people that I have encountered.
So what's next, Dan?
I guess like episode 401. You know, I'm just like,
is there anything that you're particularly like excited about as far as the way that you're kind of moving forward with stuff?
Or? I mean, the video stuff is exciting to me to like have this new challenge of, you know, for people that don't know, I have this new studio space, which feels like a real like move in the right direction. Working from home was cool, but it's hard for me to stay focused. So I've already like found that I'm like being more productive, but
going to the office.
I want to keep like learning more about this industry and how I can, you know, contribute to the growth of these things that I believe in. Cause like, I obviously like, I can't help every band that I think is great in Portland, but like for the people that I am working with, like more closely with and more regularly, I want to like keep figuring out the right ways to propel those things for sure.
Yeah. And there's so much, it's so much easier to be kind of like self-guided in those ways rather than feel like you have to like attach yourself to an arm of the industry or something right now. So there's a lot of potential for individuals to figure it out for themselves.
Yeah. And like I said, there's like, there's a lot of bands and artists that I still like have been wanting to talk to for a long time, whether they're in the city or like these folks that I've been following for a long time that maybe I feel like I could take a shot with and hopefully like continue every once in a while to jump on the mics with a hero of mine or something like that. But I think like for the most part, it's just like, I want to figure out how to continue to stay connected to this community that like I feel so fortunate to be a part of, and like figuring out how I can keep building it, you know, in ways, and like keep bringing people together. And I hope that I can like keep connecting more live shows. Like I like curating those types of things and like, just figuring out how to create sustainability, I guess, is like the next thing. Mm-hmm. Or I guess that's always a thing that's happening, but
totally,
how do I create sustainability for this thing that I obviously care about a lot and have put 8 years into? Yeah, so
400 more.
It's wild.
That's how you do it. Does 400 feel yeah, like a different number than the other milestone numbers? Is it like the 40 of podcasting?
I mean, I think I think every time, even though I don't necessarily, like, I know it's just another number.
Yeah.
Like, I think these ones that are end with two zeros at the end always feel significant just because it means that I've done it for another 2 years.
Right.
And like, it's a long time.
It's a long time.
You know?
To do something weekly.
Yeah. And that part I don't think about a lot.
Yeah.
I think it's like, oh yeah, this would be like if, I mean, there are different art forms, but it would be like if I was writing a song every week for 8 years.
Yeah.
Like I'm definitely putting in that amount of time when you think about an hour to a 2 hour conversation and maybe the 3-4 hours that goes into editing and,
yep.
and then all the social media bullshit that I have to like contribute to as well, and trying to eat tuna sandwiches regularly. Like it's so I think that there is something more significant there, and I think it will continue to be like moving forward. Just means that I made it another week. I mean, I think, you know, I hope that there's an episode 500.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know if I
it seems like you're
that,
on track.
Like a month ago,
yeah,
or 2 months ago,
right?
But I think that seems like a very cool goal to like do it for 10 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
At that point, maybe I can retire. But yeah, it'd also be fun to maybe like produce someone else's podcast. I think that's like a big goal too.
It's nice.
Like get to remove myself from the process or,
yeah.
or like make content.
Use your expertise in a different way kind of.
Yeah. Or make like video content that removes me from the conversation. And maybe I'm asking questions off camera.
Yeah.
Like Forrest and I made a documentary, a short, like a long time ago. And I think that was like a whole different experience that I thought was really cool because you get to like, that's when the editing really comes into play and you don't have to just be on
yeah.
the whole time. Like there's room for like, well, I talked to this person like an hour ago and it was fine, but then I talked to him the next day and really got some great shit. You
yeah.
know, and like doing things like that. So
nice. Yeah. Well, congratulations, buddy.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you so much
you.
For
yeah.
doing this with me.
Yeah.
Like again, I felt like I feel really good about this conversation. I hope you do too. And you did what I thought you would do. You know, like whether you prepared for it or not, I think that like you.
I mean, I prepared for it by, you know, I listened to your podcast.
Yeah.
I've known you for
We've
a while.
We've gotten to know each other the last couple of years. And yeah, I can't thank you enough for like being
thank you.
Willing, like just even bringing up the idea to me when you knew that I was, whether I was going to wrap it at 400
yeah.
or keep going. I think it's nice because everything is so fast paced and I did it 300. I did like a solo episode and tried to do something along these lines.
Yeah.
But I think this brings out different aspects of that.
Like, yeah.
So,
well, I'm honored.
I'm very appreciative of you. It's been, yeah, just so nice to get to know you like more and more
you
through
too.
Our interactions on and off mics and your incredible musician.
Like, thanks, buddy.
Getting to see your solo set the other night was really nice. And yeah, I just always look forward to seeing you, whether it's to play music or just to hang out and have some coffee or
yeah.
whatever.
Same.
So,
well, you know how you sign off, right?
I think so. Is it like it's a program and then we play it out with music that I don't know what the music's
going to
be?
You're gonna
have to write a song. I have to write a song now. I'm gonna write a song for this. Thank you to Lisa and Forrest for being here. Thank you guys so much.
Oh, yeah.
I like appreciate you guys so much just for taking your time to be here today. This means a lot. And yeah, I'm sure maybe I'll hopefully not ramble too much in the intro, but just for for all the people that have like listened for a long time, that's really fucking cool. Or if you're like a new listener to the show, like there's I know that I've sacrificed a lot of time to like make sure that this always comes out. And so just appreciative like of anybody that has supported this thing over the years and in whatever facet that might be
of yeah.
just like donating their time or like all of, I mean, this is like the type of thing that I couldn't have done alone. Yeah. You know?
Totally.
Like there's nearly 400. I know there's like some repeats, like you've done it a couple times, but like there's probably at least 300 people that have come on this show. So like I cannot keep doing the thing
yeah.
if there's no one to talk to and people being willing to do it. So thank you so much to everybody.
Hell yeah.
And
congratulations.
Thank you. Thank yeah. you. This is very cool that we did this. So, and yeah, stay up, stay tuned. It's a program. That's the Jelly Jams, and we'll catch you on the flip side, Portland, or wherever you are listening from. Make sure you check out Saroon's music. That's AOL's project, making beautiful music, especially that Gil Ghul record. I still won't be quiet about the instrumental record that you put out recently. Yeah, I think that's it.
All right.
I think that's how we end the show. We did it. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, Dan. Nice. Thank you.